This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, September 14th of 2022. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, home care workers and union organizers rallied on the steps of the state capitol yesterday, calling for a home care worker bill of rights. Boulder City Council is exploring the possibility of reopening a day shelter for homeless residents, and they're receiving a lot of feedback. Chris Moore is back with Make Them Hear You, and then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, then it's the Hightower Lowdown. Today's A Public Affair has two parts. At 8:35, we'll revisit a recent labor exchange program that examines the historic steelworker strike in Pueblo, featured in a current exhibit at History Colorado. At 9 a.m., News Director Shannon Young speaks with author Cornelia Maud Spellman about her memoir and early work writing children's books. Then at 9:30, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Christian Garabay.
The Boulder City Council will discuss the possibility of revamping part of the downtown area for pedestrian use while reopening West Pearl Street for car traffic. City officials allowed restaurants to temporarily expand the pedestrian mall, Pearl Street, westward during the coronavirus shutdown in order to accommodate safe outdoor dining. The City of Boulder intends to reopen the western end of Pearl Street to car traffic while creating other pedestrian areas. The Daily Camera says there's heavy pushback from community members who want to continue to take advantage of the outdoor pedestrian-friendly downtown. However, some businesses located on the western end of Pearl say the street closure is no longer lucrative. While some argue that the street closures benefit climate goals and encourage community members to be more active, others argue less vehicular traffic negatively impacts their businesses. Boulder City Council will meet on Thursday to discuss the varying opinions on street closures and the next steps. Renters from Colorado interrupted a national landlord conference in Washington, D.C. Tuesday to call for stronger renter protections. Claire Purnell has more.
More than 100 tenant activists, including some from Colorado, disrupted the National Multifamily Housing Council's, or NMHC's, annual fall conference to ask for fair tenant rights and protections against rising post-pandemic rent prices. The corporations on NMHC's annual list of the nation's largest landlords own over 200 million housing units collectively. Corporate landowners have increased their share of real property acquisitions since the 2008 housing market collapse, and again during the pandemic. Tenants are now facing the largest rent increase in 20 years. Renters are asking elected officials to reject all campaign contributions from corporate landlords and landlord PACs, support pro-tenant legislation, and hold a hearing investigating the dramatic increase in rents across the country. Tenants also ask that the Landlord Council set standards for tenant protections all NMHC member landlords must follow. These protections include just cause eviction protections, caps on rent increases, habitability standards, and grievance procedures. For KGNU, I'm Claire Purnell.
State environmental officials announced new, stricter requirements for monitoring air quality around the Commerce City refinery's borders. Suncor Energy says the new requirements are out of line and will sue Colorado environmental regulators. The State Air Pollution Control Division's last-minute changes to the company's fence line monitoring plan set some practical deadlines and new mandates for Suncor. A 2021 state air monitoring law requires four companies in Colorado to create fence line monitoring programs to sample air for compounds that are a byproduct of refining oil and gas, which could cause illness like cancer. Suncor's vice president of the Commerce City Refinery told the Denver Post, "Our hope is to work with the Air Pollution Control Division to reach agreement on the plan, which will provide us the certainty to complete the work we began in 2021. Our goal is to launch the program as quickly as possible, although January 1st is not feasible." In water news, Colorado's Water Quality Control Commission voted to increase protections for urban waterways through measures known as anti-degradation protections. Rosanna Longobetter reports.
The decision comes after years of advocacy by Conservation Colorado and a coalition of partners, including Green Latinos, Western Resource Advocates, Trite Unlimited, and residents in affected communities. Yesterday's move reverses a 2020 decision to not take extra steps to ensure the quality of the water in the South Platte River in North Denver, Commerce City, and Clear Creek, east of Golden. Earlier this year, the federal government allocated $350 million to protect the South Platte River and water quality in North Denver in the same way as it protects other streams in our state. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longobetter.
Colorado Parks and Wildfire officials rescued a trapped elk. Kiara Damari reports.
Drivers reported sighting an elk with mesh tangled in its antlers near Highway 36 and Baseline yesterday. Staff from Colorado Parks and Wildlife and local police tranquilized and removed almost 30 feet of mesh from its antlers. The Denver Post reports authorities then transported the animal to Estes Park. The elk was reportedly in healthy conditions. Colorado Parks and Wildlife is currently conducting a 5-year study to understand Colorado elk and their habits. They have attached GPS trackers to over 40 elk in order to study their behavior to be able to keep them as safe as possible. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
Expect cloudy weather, mild temperatures, and a slight chance of rain all throughout the Front Range today. In Boulder, a high of 77 and a low of 54. In Denver, a high of 79 and a low of 58. In Fort Collins, a high of 80 and a low of 55. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibe.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. The Colorado Health Institute estimates that 1 in 5 Coloradans will be over the age of 65 by 2030. This means that there is growing demand of jobs, especially in the direct care industry. PHI, formerly the Paraprofessionals Health Institute, estimates that there will be a demand of more than 100,000 jobs in the industry by 2028. Yesterday, home care workers, legislators, and members of Care Workers Unite met at the state capitol for a rally and a press conference. In recent weeks, 39 state legislators, plus numerous candidates for office, have signed on in support of the Home Care Worker Bill of Rights as a means to address the critical worker shortage in the industry, providing aging adult and disability care in communities across Colorado. Melissa Benjamin, External Health Care Organizing Coordinator for SEIU Local 105 and CC Wu, described home health care as an essential service sector in crisis in her speech on Capitol Steps.
We were here in July introducing our Home Care Worker Bill of Rights that will address the rampant poverty wages, unsafe conditions, and lack of respect that is driving these workers away in record numbers and creating a serious worker shortage. This year, 60% of home care workers will leave this industry. They just can't feed their kids, they can't pay the rent, they can no longer do it. They want to, but they're at a place where they have to make the difficult decision to leave the industry, right? And that is saying something, and it's long past time to pay attention. Us care workers, we've been in this capital for the last 7 years. 7 years telling our stories, offering our solutions, right? And it's time for these workers to be able to have a seat at a decision-making table. The reason why is Colorado will need more and more care workers in the coming years, and we are failing. We are failing these care workers, and they're leaving this industry. It's long past time our leaders step up and do what's necessary to reverse this. And those who have stepped up, thank you for doing that. The ones who have not need to step up and give that support too, right? Yep. We are back here today because we are gaining momentum and legislative support for the Home Care Worker Bill of Rights. Yeah. With over 50 legislators and candidates signed on. The only way to fix this industry is for our legislators to take bold action at the Capitol and not be afraid to do what's right. These workers have to take bold action every day as they stand together and put their faces out there, and their employers see that, and they do it fearlessly, right? And we need the same support from our legislators at the Capitol to not be afraid to stand up for what's right.
That was SEIU Local 105 and Colorado Care Workers Unite organizer Melissa Benjamin speaking at a home care worker rally on the steps of the state capitol yesterday. Thanks to KGNU's Dave Ashton for that audio. Boulder City Council's conversations about creating a new day shelter for homeless residents has exposed how divided people in Boulder continue to be when it comes to the causes of homelessness. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon reports.
A proposal to open a daytime shelter for unhoused individuals in Boulder has provoked debate in recent weeks. At a meeting last month to get community input about where a potential daytime shelter could be and what services it could offer, moderators struggled to keep people in line.
Jerry?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. So talking about the building, I tell you what, one of my biggest concerns is how are you going to prevent or will you prevent drug use inside the building, and who's going to pay for that? Other day shelters, like the San Francisco Linkage Center, is a low barrier resource center, which sounds a lot like this Boulder day shelter outline, but it's become a fenced off city sanctioned drug market. So I think the money would be better spent on inpatient psychiatric treatment.
Thanks, Sherry.
I don't know why that's so funny.
So just a reminder that the set of questions is around the facility, what kind of affinities it would have in the community.
Okay. So this is a done deal, or? Is there going to be a public hearing on this?
We're doing community outreach right now. And then, so this is just a discussion around the services and the type of facility.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
The city is conducting these discussions because, as anyone who has been downtown recently has probably noticed, the number of unhoused residents lining the streets, unhoused people in public spaces have prompted complaints about trash problems along the creek, sheltering in the public library, and the use of drugs in city parks. At last month's meeting, Skylar, a mother of three, says she's afraid to go downtown by herself.
I would say that currently our downtown areas are extremely unsafe. I have not been to the Band Shell since I moved here 2 years ago. I will not go to the farmer's market by myself. I don't go to the library playground anymore. I do not go to the creek anymore because I am fearful of my and my children's safety.
As uncomfortable as many people feel about homelessness in Boulder, it's not going away. Shay Castle of Boulder Beat News recently published an investigative series on homelessness in Boulder.
The reason Boulder has so much homelessness is because our housing is so expensive. That's the one correlation that we found to be true. The highest correlation with homelessness is housing costs.
According to a Zillow report, housing prices in Boulder have gone up nearly 20% in the last year. Rent for a single-bedroom apartment averages around $1,800. In Boulder, more than half of renters are rent-burdened, meaning more than a third of their income goes to rent. Boulder is the seventh most expensive real estate market in the United States, says Castle.
I don't know if people know that, but like it's San Francisco, it's San Jose, it's Honolulu. So like five places in California and then Boulder. That's it. That's the top, most expensive, more expensive than New York, New Jersey. Like, we're up there. And so it makes sense that we would have a lot of unhoused people here because that's the number one correlating factor.
Aside from sky-high housing prices, the other big reason people are seeing so many unhoused people in downtown Boulder comes back to a decision the city council made in 2017. Up until then, Boulder, like most cities in the nation, tackled homeless mostly through a church-run daytime and nighttime sheltering system. Despite efforts to aggressively push people towards sobriety and mental health services, the sheltering system's reforms were rarely enough to lift people out of homelessness. In 2017, Boulder decided it was time to try something new. A new model called Housing First was gaining in popularity across the country. This model shifted the focus from reform to housing. After the city council voted to adopt the model, they closed daytime shelters and began aggressively moving people towards housing, says Shea Castle.
It's kind of one of those swing of the pendulum things. What we've done is like, okay, we'll aggressively move them toward housing, but they have no place to be. You have to do both. You got to do both. And it's really tough because we do have limited resources and we're not getting the investment we need from the state or the feds. So I understand that. It's just like, it's not one or the other, it's both.
Despite some of the very outward-facing drawbacks to closing daytime shelters, in most every other regard, the Housing First model has been a huge success for Boulder. In the past 5 years, the program has moved about 350 people a year out of homelessness. Kurt Fenberg, the Boulder Director of Homeless Services, says if you just look at the numbers and not out your window, you'd think the city would have no problem keeping up.
In the city of Boulder, we assist on average 24 individuals a month out of homelessness and into housing solutions. This equates to the city solving homelessness every 14 months, which is amazing.
Amazing until you start looking at the numbers of people entering homelessness in Boulder. Over the last 4 years, close to 8,000 people have become homeless in Boulder. Shea Castle says at this rate, something has to give.
I understand why this is, unpalatable to people, but like we've given them no options. We've given people no options. There's no shelter for them to be during the day. They can be in the libraries, but people complain about that. And during the pandemic, there were no libraries. They can be in the parks and stuff, but people complain about that. So to me, this is one of those like, where do you want people to go? They literally have no option. They have to go somewhere. And then I would also, again, point to what other places are doing that are having success. And they all have a day shelter or day center, low barrier, somewhere for people to be legal during the day. And they all somehow manage to keep people from smoking meth there. So this is not an unheard of thing.
At the meeting to gather feedback about the possible creation of a daytime homeless shelter in Boulder, in addition to worries about a low barrier shelter creating a drug market, many pleaded with the city council to act. Michelle Rodriguez, one of the 1,600 participants of the city's Housing First program, who is now in permanent supportive housing, told the group that the shelter cannot wait.
We are desperately overdue for this day center. It needs to be now. This is not really something we can talk about and just think that it's 2 years in the future. Every year, about 3 weeks before the 21st, which is our annual homeless Memorial Day, we have to file a Colorado Open Records Act to get the list of names of the homeless people that didn't make it through the year for whatever reason.
Michelle, thank you so much. You ran out of time. But
despite pleas for urgency coming from both sides, like the moderators of last month's discussion, Boulder City Council remains committed to keeping the conversation going for at least 2 years. In the meantime, Boulder's proposed 2023 budget expands police funding to continue clearing and ticketing homeless encampments in Boulder. For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. If you are an American citizen, the Miranda rights that are read to you when you are arrested include your Sixth Amendment right to a free public defendant. That is true whether you are being charged with a minor traffic violation or first-degree murder. This is not true, however, if you are not a citizen. 1/3 of all immigration cases are against unaccompanied children, and in 12% of all immigration cases, toddlers under the age of 4 are facing a judge alone in court, where their fates, and often the physical threats their parents were trying to help them escape, are determined in a hearing where infants and toddlers have to represent themselves. I have seen photos of 2-year-olds standing alone with their teddy bear in tears before such a court, where the immigration judge strikes the gavel and summarily sends the toddler or infant back to their fates in their home countries. Children who had the benefit of legal representation at some point during their cases were more than 7 times more likely to receive an outcome that allowed them to remain in the United States than those who did not have attorneys. Because foreigners are not U.S. citizens, there is no due process in immigration court. Unlike in our criminal legal system for Americans, no public defenders are available for people facing deportation. The Vera Institute of Justice is leading the Fairness to Freedom campaign, a national movement dedicated to changing this cruel system. The stakes are life-shatteringly high. The consequences of losing a case, such as family separation and exile from one's home, can be more serious than many criminal sentences, in some cases amounting to a death penalty. The Vera Institute is fighting for federally funded legal representation for all potential deportees. According to the Vera Institute, universal legal representation, quote, advances racial justice, keeps families together, stabilizes communities, helps to keep people out of detention, plays a crucial role in restoring asylum, and disrupts the arrest-to-deportation pipeline. To my knowledge, the Fairness to Freedom movement, launched last April, does not have any legislation pending in the House or Senate yet, but the movement is supported by over 125 immigrant rights organizations, and members of the House of Representatives are being contacted now by thousands of individuals and organizations. The Vera Institute of Justice and the National Partnership for New Americans have launched a campaign to push for legislation that establishes a universal right to federally funded legal representation for anyone facing deportation. Their vision is, quote, for all people whose life, liberty, or ties to the community are at risk in the immigration system to have access to high quality and independent legal representation. If you have an opinion on the Fairness to Freedom movement, you can contact your representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Time now for Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. We are moving into autumn, and this begins the dark, more yin cycle of nature. As the fall equinox comes upon us, darkness equals the length of daylight, and this is a time to plan for the approaching winter stillness. So autumn is the season of harvest, and the life force of plants goes back into the root system. So this is also a time to eat more root vegetables. And winter squashes are in season now. You can buy a whole bunch of them, and they last for many months, especially if you keep them in a nice, cool place. All of these dark orange vegetables are so easy. You just bake them for 400 degrees in an oven, and then you can cut them open, and you can bake several at a time and use things like winter squashes and pumpkins for making soups and mashes and even breakfast porridges. You can flavor them with a bit of cinnamon and ginger. This is a time when our lungs are more vulnerable. So these high beta carotene dark orange vegetables help to make our skin and our lungs more disease resistant. It's also a season to include more pungent foods, things like garlic and ginger and cayenne pepper. All of these are antimicrobial. So think about protecting your lungs when you go out, like wearing a scarf or a jacket that buttons up. So autumn is also a time where we are being called to be more introspective, to do more inward activities, such as reading, writing, meditation, doing more things in our home. Exercises like yoga and tai chi are especially beneficial. Dry brush skin massage. In Asian medicine, the season of autumn corresponds to the element of metal, which governs the skin, the lungs, the large intestines, and we can do things like dry brush skin massaging, or occasionally saunas would be a good idea. It's not too late to plant a fall garden. You can still plant things like spinach and arugula and lettuce and kale. All these things will do okay with a little bit of cool weather. This is also time to improve your skills of communication, express yourself, finish projects to open yourself to new possibilities. It's a good time to go to bed a little bit earlier and arise a bit later. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Stewart. Shannon Young has been our producer. Special thanks to Christian Gadabai, Kiara Damari, Claire Purnell, Alexis Kenyon, Dave Ashton, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown and then an encore for the most recent labor exchange program. After that, Shannon Young sits down with author Cornelia Smellman. But first, these news headlines from the BBC.